As you're listening to me, Daisy, Apple's iPhone disassembly robot, is dismantling an iPhone into lots of recyclable parts. That's how Apple recovers more materials than conventional recycling methods. Thanks, Daisy. There's more to iPhone.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Okay, welcome to The Ruck. There's a few familiar names missing today. Stephen Jones, leave of absence. What is he doing with Karen in Antigua with Europe starting? We need to know. As for Owen Slot, well, Mrs. Slot has taken him away for a birthday treat to Morocco. He's rocking the Casbah, our very own Joe Strummer. But we have a high-class panel today. We have the last three chairmen of the Rugby Writers Association, even society. Alex Lowe, Sarah Mockford, and the dog man himself, Adam Hathaway, in no particular order. If you haven't worked out who I am, I'm the bloke who writes the occasional column for the Times, the Sunday Times, and annoys you on Sky, Stuart Barnes. So let's start with, as ever, dog racing. Adam, the punters want to know what has been happening to your crew. I hear things haven't gone as well as they could have.
Well, we had 2 seconds this weekend, but what we can't really understand is Ninja Rascal won over hurdles a week ago. Trainer puts him back over the flat and he comes second, so...
Well, I've got to say, with the four-legged horses, when I had horses with Martin Pipe, he had the same plot. We'll go to Brighton on the flat, win an absolute fortune. Triple your biggest ever bet and add another 300 quid, Barnsley, is what he said. Chippewa came last, so don't let your trainer do that again.
The syndicate Christmas dinner's in jeopardy at the moment, so... Ninja bet get skates on.
Sarah,
Stuart.
Four games seen today, seen at the weekend. What would be your pick of the matches?
For me, I really enjoyed Toulon Scarlets. I think trailing 18-0, I thought, God, they could easily lose here in 40-0 or something, and they probably a few seasons ago they would. But I thought they responded really well, came back into it. They probably should have won it in the end. I think my highlight was when Halfpenny cut between two Toulon defenders. Clearly they didn't think he'd actually run with the ball, they'd pass it, and scored a lovely try.
Did you see that game?
I did see bits of it, but I was at Franklin's Gardens. One of my observations from that game again is that somebody needs to teach Lee Halfpenny how to tackle properly, because he tries to tackle like an American football player, gets his head on the wrong side all the time.
It happens all the time
and He's got as far as he's got in the game without really knowing how to tackle properly.
I also thought it was really weird what they did at the end, where they could have gone for the line out, but they just took a quick tap 5 metres from their own 22. I didn't really understand why that was better choice than kicking it to halfway and then having a go.
Well, if Toulon had their backs turned and they'd gone immediately, it would have been understandable. But the ref had stopped the play and were telling them what was what, it was really weird. And after about 20 seconds, they saw sense. Was it a good point for the Scarlets, Adam, do you think, in Toulon? Or is it a game they should have won? And overall, to the panel, what are we thinking? What is a good scoreline on an away game?
I think Scarlets would be quite happy with that. I mean, Leicester seemed quite happy on
with a bonus point.
Doing the same thing with a losing bonus point on Saturday in Paris. I think the key to getting out of a pool is to get something when you go on the road. Not necessarily win, but just get something.
Let's look at the Exeter, Glasgow, Montpellier, Leinster pool then. Sarah, Glasgow played quite well, but they didn't get anything. How disappointed will they be going away from Exeter without a point? The pressure on them now playing Leinster next week.
Yeah, I think they'll be absolutely gutted. They played well enough to get at least a point from that. Exeter did really well to deny them that, and I think Exeter will come out much happier. I think Glasgow, they've said all along they want to get into the quarterfinals again. You know, they're targeting winning this competition. You can't go to Exeter and not come away with anything. Okay, Exeter didn't get a bonus point, like a try bonus point, but they should have come away with at least 1 point.
Alex?
There were a few wasted bonus points over the weekend. Bath should absolutely feel that they've missed out by not getting one at home to Benetton Treviso.
Oh, you're doing Benetton a disservice.
Hang on, I was going to say
Benetton
to you now.
Benetton should have scored loads of tries in that game.
Have you seen much Pro 14 rugby? They've won three of their last four games. Are we saying Bath are useless, or should we be saying that Benetton are being savagely underestimated, as you, Sarah, obviously thought, quite rightly so too?
Well, I just think Benetton will be more disappointed from that game from not scoring any points. Like, looking, I mean, I didn't watch it, I only saw some of the highlights, but one, they've been playing a lot better this season. You know, they were denied one try in the corner by Rocco Degouni, of all people, last minute tackle.
Which is a dodgy tackle.
What do you mean, of all people? Are you with Eddie Jones that he can't defend?
Well, I'm just saying that's what everyone talks about.
Cleaned him out around the head. I mean, he was lucky to stay on.
Yeah. And then, you know, their scrum was really dominant. So I think Treviso would come away from that more disappointed.
Well, I think the only people who probably didn't think it was going to be a walkover were Bath themselves, because Todd Blackadder put most of his big guns out, didn't he?
Yeah. I mean, Treviso are playing well. And if you study their form, you know, Edinburgh are not complete idiots this season. They nearly beat them. They perform pretty well and they've had some good wins.
Yeah, no, Treviso have done well. All I mean is if you win 23-0, you would feel like you've fallen short if you haven't.
Yeah,
nailed the bonus point. That's what I mean. And the other team is Wasps, who absolutely should have left Ulster with a bonus point, but their discipline was so poor that as they were trying to chase the game, it was penalty after penalty, and they allowed it to get away from them.
Now, our discipline is poor. I was going to come to that pool. Staying on the other one, the Leinster one, staying with you, Alex, Montpellier got a bonus point in Dublin. Are they halfway interested in this tournament under Vern Codder? Are they just thinking point, that's okay, or is that point a sign that they're really intent? I mean, they're playing Exeter next Sunday. Looks a tough game for Exeter.
You know, it does. I think they'll be disappointed, given the quality of the Leinster team, the number of players Leinster were missing. Montpellier might have felt that they had a chance to win that game. I think they'll feel that in that pool, an away point is not bad. I do feel that they will take it seriously. I think Montpellier, one of the French teams who want to make a mark in Europe. We've spoken on the pod before about they're trying to fast track it. They want to do it straight away. They fielded a strong team, and it would be a tough challenge for Exeter to go there, because they've got the power and they've got the dazzle behind. And Leinster just managed to stop them enough to win that game with a pretty rookie team, all things considered. So Montpellier will be happy with the point, but disappointed that they couldn't get more, I think.
Right, we're going to take a change of gear now and just pull away from the Champions Cup for a minute and a couple of other little stories. We'll start with the Challenge Cup. Kransky Yar, either a half man, half biscuit song or the Sloan Rangers of Siberia, beat Stade Francais, the European Challenge Cup champions. I looked at the team. There were enough names in that French team to think that's a hell of a performance. Anyone want to comment upon the Siberian win? Sarah, Alex?
Well, no, it's obviously...
I thought we'd all be coming in here with bottles of vodka.
Well, it's fantastic for the tournament, and I just hope that Stade Francais get back a bit quicker than Connacht did a couple of years ago, because it took them 3 days to get back.
I think that's why this year and last year the Russian teams have to play like two home games in a row, so... Yeah. Krasnoyarsk again plays Edinburgh this weekend, so it'd be interesting if they can back it up.
It's the same as the Pro 14 thing with the South African teams.
Yeah, and also it's like the amount of a lot of these games, it's a lot of travel also for the home team. So I think NSI last year still played thousands of miles away from their own home because of the weather. Like, the weather just makes it so difficult and risky, and EPCR are very conscious of avoiding the 5 days it took Connacht to get back.
Yeah, they did.
Yeah. I think it's a great story. Just for rugby, but for, you know, as a lesson in taking Europe seriously, Stade Francais did have some names. Shane Garrity was playing, and a few other players who you'd expect should go and be a team of Russians, but you can't. There's no easy games in Krasnoyarsk.
Are you angling for a trip to Siberia, Rafa?
Well, actually, I think it'd be really interesting to go and see them and find out how tough it is to make it to play at home, thousands of miles from home. Russian rugby is one of those sort of dormant giants, so they've got the players and the interest. It'd be fascinating to go and spend some time over there.
They're doing really well in sevens and 15s is growing there, so this will really help them, I think.
Small question, my geography when it comes to the Russian wastelands isn't great. Are we certain that Krasnoyarsk are in Europe? They're not an Asian team, are they? I mean, are they in by default here?
It's way over my head. I haven't done geography since I was 16.
I just wondered, okay, well, we'll pass on that one.
Did they get in the Eurovision Song Contest?
Yeah.
Will Australia get in the Eurovision Song Contest?
Well, South Africa get in the Pro 14, so...
It's a globalised world,
folks.
It's a global world.
The South African teams could use that as a case to get into the European competitions, though, couldn't they?
And that is the perfect segue. My next point is about Worcester Rugby Club. Finding life very difficult. They did get their first win since April against strugglers Brieve at home, but I picked up that Alan Solomons is going to be helping out Gary Gold in the foreseeable future. And I wondered when I said that if there would be a groan. There was a groan. It came from the man whose dogs didn't perform as they could have. Adam, this Solomons factor.
I just think every club he's been to has turned into a bit of a nightmare, actually, isn't it? I mean,
are we talking about results, performance, or both?
Results and performance.
Good.
He's, just because you're a South African doesn't mean you're a brilliant coach. It's another example of clubs kowtowing to the Southern Hemisphere. I think it's pathetic. Can't they get someone else in?
Yeah, and also you look back to his time at Edinburgh, all he did was recruit a load of Southern Hemisphere players who were, you know, half decent but not great. And I don't think Edinburgh, you know, appreciated it. I think now we're seeing what Edinburgh can do with a Richard Cockrell there who can actually build something. I don't believe Alan Solomons can do that sort of thing.
You would think that Gary Gold is a good enough coach to do it himself.
Are they lining him up to then replace Gary Gold at the end of the season?
Well, God help.
Good luck.
Well, you have to assume that that's potentially part of their motivation, because that club have had four directors of rugby in 2 years or something. It's the turnover has been ridiculously high for a club that's trying to establish itself in the Premiership. There's no continuity, so there's no one buys into it, and there's the players who bought into Worcester because of Gary Gold, and a lot of them, I believe, because of Ed Griffiths. Ed Griffiths has now left. Gary Gold is leaving. So maybe they're bringing Alan Solomons to try and have some kind of continuity. But as you just said, his track record doesn't suggest it's the best appointment.
And the final non-Champions Cup talk of the day. Stephen Jones didn't head off to Antigua without dropping one more Jones bomb. Anyone who read yesterday's Sunday's Times will see he had a pop at my dear old friend, Rob Andrew. Now, I, viewers, I'm not going to be talking on that. I don't want someone saying, are you still bitter and twisted? But I want one of you three to say, but is anyone going to defend Rob Andrew? He's taken a hammering last week.
Well, I am, because I've actually read the whole book and not just the extracts that are in another paper. Obviously, the newspaper in question only had a certain amount of words they could use from the book. So if you're going to do a job like that, you pick out the juiciest ones, which was slaughtering Stuart Lancaster, the stuff about Johnny Wilkinson, because it's Johnny, and... England aren't going to get another English coach after Eddie Jones. If you read the whole book, it's actually quite fair to Lancaster. You only get a couple of mentions, Barnsley. He's not bitter about that.
Thank God for that.
He's actually quite fair about Lancaster. All he says is that he went off the rails in the last year, which I think most of us probably agree with.
Yeah, I mean...
It's actually... You know, one of our friends, Ghost, wrote it, and it's actually a very good read.
Let's give Chris Hewitt a name, because it drives me mad. We get these books, and you hear it, and it said, this book by Kevin Peterson, by Rob Andrew, and they're invariably written by intelligent, articulate journalists. So let's give Chris...
Hewitt wrote this one.
Yeah, well, I was... You wrote one of them, didn't you? But Chris Hewitt, what do we think of his writing style on this book, Adam? Are we going to give him a plug? Should it be bought for Christmas?
You can tell Hewitt's written it, for sure. Luckily I got sent a copy through the post, but I'd thoroughly recommend it.
Sarah, have you got a copy for Rugby World covering it?
I haven't had a copy, actually. But my colleague Alan Peary has, and I think he really enjoyed it, too.
He really enjoyed it.
Yeah, I haven't had a copy, but I would like to read it, and not just for the sort of salacious Mike Tyndall stuff and Stuart Lancaster stuff, but for the... kind of, the book is covering the professional era.
Yeah, there's no of his playing careers. So there's no barbs at Barnsley.
They go back to when he's director of rugby at Newcastle, and sort of the dawn of professionalism. I'd be interested to read that. And he obviously was heavily involved. The two things that he has been really hands-on with at the RFU is a club country arrangement. And the first deal they did, he was all over. The second one, I'm not sure he was quite as involved. I think Stephen Brown had a much bigger role than he's been credited for in striking that deal with the clubs. But so just as a study really on rugby's lurch into professionalism through the eyes of someone who's been at the forefront on it as a coach and administrator, I think it sounds like a really good read.
I mean, as a a sort of rugby fan, that's actually the most interesting bit of the book, is how they put together the first deal, who the protagonists were on either side, who were the troublemakers. But obviously, if you can only use 5,000 words in a newspaper, you're not going to pick that out.
Who are the troublemakers?
Tom Walkinshaw comes across pretty poorly in it. But, you know, there you go. He can't answer back, can he?
No, he can't. No. How does Frank Cotton come out of it?
Pretty good.
Right, back to Europe now. I was going to say, I've got a little note here, teams who impressed you, but we're going to hold that one for the finale of the show, because...
Build it up, Barnsley.
I don't think we're going to have too much variety there. best games, and not just quality, but games you really enjoyed. Sarah, can we start with you there?
I really enjoyed a moment in Montpellier Leinster when Robbie Henshaw was bowled over by a Nadolo.
And he got back up.
He managed to get there and still stop him, then got to his feet, drove backwards, and got a turnover. And I thought that was a really classy moment from him, given that he's only just back from injury. I didn't see Harlequin's La Rochelle, but from the scoreline, I would think that was quite a good game. You watched that, didn't you, Stuart?
Yeah, well, I commentated on it, so I hope I was watching it, yeah. That was an interesting game. You know, all of us, we're up in this world of clichés, aren't we? Yeah, it's the French, it's their first team time in this tournament. They won't take it seriously. La Rochelle said all week they would take it seriously. They fielded a strong team, and they did. And they played some fantastic rugby. I think it was the best game of the weekend. We're not talking about the purity of rugby. They were fantastic. I mean, Marcus Smith as a subplot was very interesting. He's got an awful lot of talent. I don't think he reads the game as well as someone like George Ford, but I think he needs a 12 that Ford has now. You know, when Ford was 18, he did have this vision thing. He now has Tamua to help him as well. At the moment at Harlequins, Jamie Roberts will run a great line for you and he'll make his hits in defence, but he doesn't offer much as a second pair of eyes. And I think Danny Kerr, you wouldn't say reading the game is his greatest strength either. So I think Smith's in a difficult situation, but he obviously has a lot of talent. It was a really exciting game, and you've got to love them just to have a prop forward called Weenie Atonio, the French prop. There is nobody... worse named than Weenie. He is about 25 stone. They're a massive pack, yet they play wonderful rugby. And you know, Ryan Lamb, I'd forgotten he'd gone to La Rochelle. He came off and I'm thinking, Lamb, he's going to be the weakness. He played beautifully. He played really well. And from a La Rochelle perspective, you know, Brock James is the guy that makes them tick, and he wasn't there. They get Brock James back and they got more accuracy and pace on their passing and wide kicking game. You know, they're not going to win this tournament, but I fancy them to go through into the knockout stages and be a threat to anyone.
Do you think Lamb's found a home after having played for 900 clubs in the Premiership?
Well, he has, but you know what? Gloucester was his first home, and in those days under Dean Ryan, they played sort of kaleidoscopic rugby, and he loved it. Sometimes players have to find a club and an environment that suits them, and I think Worcester played very much sort of 10-man rugby survival stuff. Most of his other homes in the Premiership, Northampton... didn't really play much rugby out wide.
One season at Leicester.
Leicester, not the right sort of club. He's got the fit in La Rochelle, and it's really interesting. That's a good question because, you know, we talk about... he's a...
I didn't realise he's 31 now. That made me feel so old.
I thought he'd be about 35. He's been going forever. But he's found a home at La Rochelle, and it's a reminder... when we talk about, we get to November and talk about selections, it's not just about the players, it's how they fit into a system. You know, I think that's really important, and brilliant Ryan Lamb and superb La Rochelle.
And on Marcus Smith, you talk about fitting into a system. It's a very good point about him being a 10 without a set of eyes outside him. But I think Jamie Roberts is in the last year of his contract.
Mm.
And you think that with an 18-year-old of that talent, Quinn's going to build a back line around him. So their recruitment for next season should be based on what's best for Marcus Smith. Who's the 12 that we can bring in that would help Marcus Smith fulfil his potential?
Well, especially, you know, Danny Kerr's main man there, and Danny Kerr, as I said, is not a great reader of a game. Danny Kerr needs a composed 10. So at the moment, they're a little bit frenetic. Before the game before that Harlequin match, I was watching it on the box, Adam, the Leicester game,
mm-hmm.
and whilst Ford isn't on the gain line and he's not dictating, the balance of him and Tamua, he just floats, he picks his passes and he lets Tamua do some of the kicking. Tamua's pass for the Johnny May try is a beauty, and he fits really well. If Matt Tamua was playing outside Marcus Smith, I think we'd be evaluating him to an even greater standard than we are at the moment. I think he's got real talent, but I think Harlequin have to find a 12 who's a footballer. And it takes us back to the England thing, doesn't it, about who's your 10? Are you going to go Farrell or Ford, or are you going to go Ford and Farrell to have the 10-12? I mean, on that debate, I remain a 10-12 person. Anyone like prefer the Roberts style outside of 10?
Ford and Farrell all day long. And, I mean, Tamura has been fantastic for Ford this season. At Leicester.
I think it just, we'll talk about Saracens later, I'm sure, but there were points yesterday.
We may.
When
we may.
They have Goode playing that role from fullback, but it's a different setup, but it's a similar dynamic. Alex Goode can get involved, and the next phase, Owen Farrell's there to run the show, or vice versa. And you need those two ball
playmaking
players.
Options.
Yeah, I think whether it's at 10-12, I mean, I would prefer it at 10-12 because I like a fullback to be, as much as I admire Alex Goode, I like a sort of Anthony Watson, Kirtley Beale type fullback who'll run and threaten and use pace and footwork, and rather than just the sort of strategy. And
Mike Brown, he played very well on his comeback game, by the way.
He did. Yeah, I mean, he brings the ball back hard and he's aggressive. I'm a fan of his too. I like him. I think if I was to have a ball player to choose between 12 and 15 in my team, it would be at 12.
Okay. Yeah, because I think you can just get them involved a lot more often.
And it takes back the All Blacks. They were at their peak in 2015 because Mar Nonu had made the transformation from being a bosher into a footballer who could bosh when he wanted to.
And they had Conrad Smith at 13, which isn't a bad...
If everyone's fit for Eddie Jones, and if you've got Ford and Farrell at 10 and 12, Stuart, what's the best outside centre... Therefore, is it a because at the moment Eddie Jones is talking about
Bentio, no doubt at all. It's the balance of it. If you've got Ford and Farrell, you know, Farrell is now running and playing like a fly half, so he's England will have two fly halves who's a makeshift 12. You have to have someone with that ability to carry, because you don't want Farrell carrying into heavy traffic. He's a playmaker, a passer. You've got four eyes there that can read a game. You can actually, in that balance end, say, let's have someone who can break the gain line. You know, ever since Jones has come, he's been, like most of England, like most of us in the media, obsessed with the myth that is Manu Tuilagi. Because Tuilagi, at his prime, in that day against New Zealand, burst the gain line. Now, Tio did that in New Zealand, and when I've seen him play in a desperate Worcester team struggling, he's always looked pretty good. So to me, that's the 10, 12, 13 for England, definitely at the moment.
Well, Eddie must be thinking along those lines, because he couldn't wait to get Manu back in the squad quick enough, could he? Yeah. As soon as he was half fit, he was back in the squad, and then...
Based on absolutely nothing.
Yeah, exactly.
The song and a prayer. Back to Europe. Sarah, I want you now in your vitriolic mood.
No, oh, God!
No.
It's normal then.
Like when I phone you up to say any chances of work and you just put me down. No, I want you now, Sarah, to tell me the teams that have absolutely no chance of making the last eight after one round of the European Champions Cup. Nail them.
Okay.
Come on. No fence sitting.
No, that's fine. Ospreys, to be fair, I was impressed with the Ospreys yesterday. Yeah. I thought they'd get absolutely hammered. But I don't know whether that's as much, because Clermont, I was distinctly unimpressed with. They didn't seem like their sparky selves that they usually are in Europe. So the Ospreys having lost at home, I don't think they're going to get through. Treviso, as much as they're improved.
Yeah, we'll accept that one.
Don't think they're going to get through. Cast, drawing at home to Munster. Again,
they're not going to get through.
Northampton, sorry, I don't know how I've forgotten to mention Northampton, obviously. They might have another torrid week away at Clermont. Clermont should improve. I mean, I was a bit underwhelmed by the French, apart from Montpellier, who could have won if Nagusa wasn't so selfish and took the ball into contact and passed to the free man outside him. I thought, Clermont weren't great, Toulon weren't great. They sort of switched off after taking that lead. And then I think whoever loses out of Harlequins Wasps on Sunday, that'll be a decisive.
Right, come on, who's going to lose then?
Wasps.
Wasps are going to lose.
Well,
right.
They've lost more. They've already got a horrendous injury list, and they lost more players on Friday night.
Great. Let's talk a little bit of Wasps then. There's a 5-day turnaround. They've got a load of players missing. We're all feeling sorry for them. 5-day turnaround. This is a squad you work with day in, day out. I assume they wouldn't have done too much work. You don't have to do physical work out of Europe. You do it before. They did have four players back. It's not as if they were absolutely stripped to the bare bones. It was a stronger team than the one that played Saracens. And I watched that game. And yes, they led 9-3 at one stage. But the main reason for that is because Ulster have no scrum. Connacht's pack demolished them. You know, once Ulster played for 5 minutes, that game was put to bed. I think Wasps are playing really poorly. And I don't think it's just now a matter of personnel. I think their confidence has gone and their shape has gone. Is Dai Young not in trouble, but is Dai Young feeling some pressure now for the first time in a couple of years?
Well, I'm sure he is. I mean, you probably shouldn't say this on here, but I'd always be tempted to chuck the next game and take the boys away and take them to Spain and play golf and do whatever. And
go beyond Northampton and give up after one round.
Have they got enough players to do that?
That's true. I mean, they've had a terrible time of injuries, but, you know, Harlequin's got 25 people out, or if you include the academy people. I don't know, they just had such a bad shot. They need to draw a line somewhere and start again.
It's not. I mean, they did have players back on Friday night. They were hit by losing three players before half-time, one of whom, Brendan Macken, meant they had to play Miller at 10, move Gopper to midfield. That's accepted. But the players, the big-name players they have, are also playing really badly.
Yeah.
Willie LaRue looks a shadow of the player.
He hasn't done anything since he's gone there.
Nathan Hughes, I didn't think, played very well at all, made some poor decisions.
James Haskell looks heavy.
He does looks heavy late. So it's not last season when they were playing with pomp and skill and flair and pace. There's none of that about their game this season at all. They're missing Cipriani, definitely.
Yeah.
Dan Robson has missed a few games, but it's more than just. Than just injuries. I mean, the injuries haven't helped. But on Friday night, they had a team there that could have done a hell of a lot more in Arsenal than they did. And you're right, the moment Arsenal almost decided to go and win it, they went and won it.
Easily,
And Pierre Tau and Stockdale were superb.
That Stockdale kid's massive, isn't he?
Yeah, he is.
He's
a
big lad. He's a big lad.
And that first try they scored, Elliot Daly was a bit out of position in defence, and then Wade then stood off. And then LaRue came in off his wing because he didn't know what was going on. And meanwhile, Pierre Towell's just weaving this lovely run, tying them all in and releasing Stockdale into space. It was a lovely try, but it was poorly defended, I think.
Sometimes you don't realise how influential players are until you're missing them. And whilst Danny Cipriani now is no longer the sort of flying sprinter, tabloid headline player that he was of old, I watch Wasps without him and the timing of his pass, the delay on the run, the decision when to kick and when not to kick. I think that since Danny Cipriani has been injured, we've actually seen what a good player he is. Would anyone agree or disagree with that?
Well, also, I mean, that's going back to the Ford-Farrell thing. I mean, when Cipriani plays with Gopeth, who is an out-and-out 10.
It's a nice 10-12 balance,
yeah,
isn't
exactly.
It?
Exactly.
Right, OK. We're going to go to Paris now, where Adam was enjoying himself. We're going to talk Leicester first. I thought they did bloody well to get a bonus point. And they're back in contention in this pool with Cass to come at home.
Well, they did well to get a bonus point considering they lived on sort of starvation rations, really. I mean, as we said previously, Ford and Tamur played really well together. Ben Youngs was good. Up front, they still lack a bit of
nasty in the second row.
Oh, yeah. They want a bit of old-fashioned Martin Johnson type dog in there, really.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what they could do with, but they all seem quite happy to nick away with a point, particularly as they're playing against one of the most unbelievable players I've ever seen.
Leone Nacarara, I will leave you three to talk about him. I commentated on him in the 2015 Pro 12 final when Glasgow beat Munster, and he beat them one-handed on his own. That was a similar performance. He was touched with genius, wasn't he, Saturday?
He's ridiculous. If forwards still go drinking, they should kick him out of their drinking club because he plays like a back. He's 6'9", 19 odd stone. he's absolutely bonkers. Don't know how you play against him. We were laughing in the end. Every time he got the ball, he could have five Leicester players hanging off him and he'd get it away somewhere. It was unbelievable.
You say he plays like a back, but when they throw to him in the line-out, you can actually overthrow by about a metre.
Yeah,
and
sure,
he'll still pluck it up and give you a clean ball to the scrum half.
I was hearing the weekend that he runs giant paw over the ball, one-handed, which means he can, like, sort of like an octopus, just keep it away from any tackler, anyone trying to knock it out of his hand, keep it up high, basketball-type offloads. But he works on that. It's not. I was hearing from O'Gara was saying that it's not just a kind of a natural skill that he just does it. He works on it. He practices it. He's got an incredible core, by all accounts, core strength, which means he can operate standing up tall. And he's in that kind of form, as he was in that final, he is unstoppable because you can't pin him down. You think you've got him. You think you've chucked him into touch, and this giant arm kind of scoops from around over your head and flicks it back in field.
And it's pure maths as well, isn't it? If two or three people are having to take one man, then somewhere you got space. And you know, if Racing had held on to the created spaces, they would have hammered Leicester. They played some. Yeah. They actually played some good rugby. It's not just him. They've got a very powerful carrying game.
Well, can I just make my point on Nakarora? Sorry, massive fan.
Yes.
And at the 2015 World Cup, I interviewed him about offloading.
Whoa.
And he learned to do that from playing in Fiji in rivers, because they would play, don't ask me why they were playing in rivers, but because the water's so high, you had to lift your arms up quite high to pass. So that's how.
Really?
That's what he told me.
You've
got to remember, this is a guy that played in the Olympics as well, in sevens. So for someone to come from second row to play in sevens, win a gold medal, I think, you know, he's just one of those one-of-a-kind players in the world. Up there with Beauden Barrett in terms of skill.
I'd have drowned if I'd played for the same club as in the river. My God.
The train is now approaching. Junction at platform. Passengers, airport, please stay on board. Next stop, road station.
iOS helps you control which apps you share your exact location with. There's more to iPhone.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Rising sea levels, extreme weather patterns, extinctions of species. Our planet needs protecting. I'm Adam Vaughan, the environment editor for The Times, and this is Planet Hope from The Times, in partnership with Rolex and its Perpetual Planet Initiative. In this podcast, we hear from leading experts from around the world who are committed to finding solutions. These explorers, scientists, entrepreneurs, and citizens are committed to a common goal: to protect our home, Earth. Listen now wherever you get your podcasts.
Now, so we all agreed that Leone Nakarara is the player of round one, aren't we?
Yep.
Yeah, we are. And sorry, viewers, we're not going to have a shock here. When we come to the team performance, it's Saracens. I watched that game in a pub in Chiswick in a state of religious awe. And if anyone saw me come out of the...
Is that your name for it?
If anyone saw me come out of that pub at full-time staggering, it was just the quality of Saracen's performance, I promise you.
Not any of that red wine.
I promise you. I thought... what did Mark McCall say? Their finest performance of the season. I think it's the best I've seen Saracens play before they came European champions. It was spot on.
Yeah, I was down there last week talking to the three assistant coaches, and they were talking about the evolution of their game attacking wise, because what they've been frustrated with so far this season is they've produced it in patches and then they've switched off in games. And I left there with a real sense that they believed that they were going to do that on Sunday night. They talked about how this is a team that haven't yet hit their straps this season, and they believed they were going to deliver, and they did. And of all the you talked about what's a good score away from home. I mean, 57-13 is an incredible score away from home. But the moment in it that I thought summed up their performance was about 5 minutes from time, when Owen Farrell, with some help from Jackson Ray,
smashed
Courtney Laws in his tracks. Courtney Laws, the only Northampton player who looked like he was on a par with anyone from from Southampton, stopped him in his tracks, smashed him backwards. 5 minutes from time, they were desperate not to concede a try. They did in the end, but I just thought that that relentlessness for 80 minutes was awe-inspiring, like you said.
Sarah, papers, social media, so I've been told, I don't read too much of it, but everyone is saying that Jamie George demolished Dylan Hartley. Is it fair to compare the two on the balance of yesterday?
I didn't watch yesterday's game, sorry, because I knew...
If you trust us that Saracens were fantastic and Northampton were crushed, can you... Eddie Jones was there. Can you draw anything from that?
I wouldn't say he drew anything from that, because obviously Dylan's not going to be helped by his team performance, and George was obviously massively helped by his. But if you look at their body of work over the last 6 months, George has got to be ahead of Hartley now. And it's just how much Hartley's leadership is crucial to Eddie's plan. I think that's what it comes down to. I don't think it's about ability. I think it's about what Hartley delivers in terms of leadership rather than skill.
It's not just off the field as well, is it? I mean, Eddie was a hooker. Hartley's a hooker. Eddie likes a bit of edge. Hartley gives him a bit of edge. Hartley is very much Eddie Jones taking the field in someone else's body. I honestly believe that's a situation. I do believe that's a situation.
Is that
there.
Like Joe Smith and Johnny Sexton?
Yeah, very similar. He's an emissary on earth, yes.
You're right. Eddie Jones goes to these games and he sits in the stand under a bobble hat, which he doesn't need to wear because it was tropical in the East Midlands. But he sits there and he gives nothing away in any game.
I don't know. Wasn't there the incident when Hartley got sent off last season when Jones was in the crowd going, something down? There's definitely one occasion where he's done that.
The occasion I'm thinking of yesterday was after the debated tackle about from Owen Farrell on Ben Foden, and then Tamon Harrison comes wading in and there's a bit of a scuffle, and Eddie's sitting there under his bubble hat with a smirk on his face, loving it. Loved seeing his abrasive fly half inside centre just standing up, making those big hits. He loves that niggle. That's my point. He loves that edge that he gets from Dylan Hartley, that he gets from Owen Farrell.
Adam, or maybe he doesn't get from Jamie George.
No, he's not a soft player. Adam, let's not talk about Farrell. He just gets better and better. We know that. Mm-hmm. But Liam Williams has come in. How do you think he's going? And outside of all the stars, you know, the bits and pieces, the glue that holds him together, which Saracens are the ones that impressed you so much yesterday?
Well, if you take away the sort of Galacticos from the...
Yeah, let's take them out.
I mean, the guy who impressed me most hasn't played for England for over a year, I think, was George Cruz. I mean, he had an absolute stormer. Ran the line out. I spoke to him in the week and he gave me the usual spiel, you know, not thinking about England, you know, as long as I play well for Saracens, blah, blah, blah. But I know we've got hundreds of locks knocking about. Izzy Ekwe was pretty good yesterday as well, wasn't he? But Cruz looks like he's back on form. Williams, well, Jim Mallon just said before the game, they picked a team to deal with the aerial threat of Saracens and they still couldn't deal with it. Williams was great in that respect.
So, one round gone, five to go and then three knockout rounds. I'm asking the question now, is it premature? Can anyone stop Saracens making it three?
Not based on what we saw on this round. I think I picked Montpellier before the tournament. But I think... if Saracens play like that, or even close to that...
If you're offered evens money for the rest of the tournament, do you take it?
Yeah.
I'm not offering you evens. Sarah!
What are you offering me?
3-1 on.
Well, I'd probably still take it. I think, yes, it's hard to see anyone beating them. I saw your piece in the Sunday Times yesterday saying that Clermont and Toulon were the...
No, you
it
did
would
not.
Be one of the three.
No, you did not, because that was not in yesterday. Nope.
Oh, the week before.
Thank
sorry.
You.
The
week you're going to nail me. Be accurate.
Sorry. The week before, with saying it would be Clermont, Toulon or Saracens, to be honest, Clermont and Toulon neither really blew me away this weekend, so I think Saracens are up there, and I agree. Montpellier probably looked the strongest French team. It'd be interesting with Racing when they get Dan Carter back, whether that they can continue the role from beating Leicester.
Adam, anyone?
No, I'll take the even money, thanks. No, I can't see it, but... I mean, they got beat by Bath 5 weeks ago, but if they play like that, no one can live with them. I put this out there yesterday. They win the Six Nations.
That's an interesting point. And the other thing about Saracens, they're so good, they lose when they don't mind losing. And I think we have to understand that. When you've got 22 Premiership games and you've got a playoff system, you don't have to win them all. And they've become very good losing a couple of games during the Six Nations last year. They just went too far and it cost them a home semi-final. Yeah. But generally, they get to Europe, they see Europe games as cup games, and they have to win it. And then you see the real Saracens, and I think they're a class apart. And it's an interesting point you make about if they were in the Six Nations, they would take some beating.
When I was talking to Alex Anderson in the week about the difference between, that's sort of about, it's kind of how do winning teams keep evolving? That was the idea of the conversation. But in it, he was saying that Europe is their selection matches for Saracens. During the Premiership, they have a rotation system. Playoffs and Europe are selection games. So this is their first, you know, they pick their best team, and he says they therefore play their best rugby in Europe because of it.
Well, we've had three rugby writers, chairman here. You knew they wouldn't let you down. They haven't. All I'll say is, Owen and Steve, enjoy your holidays. Don't hurry back.
The train is now approaching. Junction at platform. Passengers, airport, please stay on board. Next stop, road station.
iOS helps you control which apps you share your exact location with. There's more to iPhone.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.